From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. As Congress considers new financial regulations, Simon Johnson has some advice that will surely not be taken. But Johnson's advice possesses at least this virtue you can sum up what the MIT professor and former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund says about the nation's biggest banks very simply. If they're too big to fail, make them smaller. That's what Johnson and his co-author James Kwok argue in their new book, 13 Bankers, The Wall Street Takeover, and The Next Financial Meltdown. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
And I should say first, the 13 bankers in the title attended a momentous meeting at the White House 1 year ago. But in fact, among the 13 banks they represent, there are really six banks you say are so big that the government ought to make them smaller. First, who are those banks?
Well, the six banks are the usual suspects, if you like. They're the mega banks. We've got JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, of course, is in that category. We've got Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, that came from the investment banking side. And we have Wells Fargo and Bank of America filling out the six. These banks are simply huge.
And what's the danger in their hugeness?
Well, the danger, Robert, is pretty simple. They are so big that if it looks like they're going to fail, you're going to have a conversation like this with the Treasury Secretary or with the President. Somebody's going to say, let's let them just fail, just like we did with Lehman. And someone else is going to say, oh, wait a minute. When Lehman went bankrupt, that was an enormous disaster. That triggered a global financial panic. We can't do that. We must therefore save them, provide a bailout, whatever language you want to use. And that leads you into exactly the kind of dynamics that we've had over the past 2 years, which are both disastrous, expensive, and really not what you want to repeat.
Now, there is an argument that only the biggest banks, enormous banks, can do the biggest, most enormous deals. If U.S. banks aren't big enough, then there'll be some other big banks elsewhere that'll do the job. Is there any virtue at all to bigness?
No, none whatsoever at this level. And there simply is no evidence, Robert, for economies of scale or scope or whatever you want to call them for banks over $100 billion in size. So where our banks were, let's say, in the early 1990s was completely fine in terms of efficiency and their ability to handle global business and so on and so forth. Where they are now, we've got banks that are $1 trillion or up to $2 trillion, actually. Citigroup was $2.5 trillion in total assets, roughly speaking, when it ran into serious trouble in 2008. These banks do not benefit society at additional size, but they obviously create big risks for society. That's what you saw in 2008 and 2009.
All right. How do you think the government then should make these banks smaller? Should it break them up by function, say, reimpose the firewall between commercial banking and investment banking? Or should it simply say, you can keep on doing all the many things you do, but just shrink?
Well, our suggestion is to modify and update the legislation that already applies to this issue. The 1994 Regal-Neal Act says that no bank can have more than 10% of total retail deposits in the country. That's exactly the right kind of idea. The problem is since 1994, most of the action in terms of bank growth has not been in retail deposits and been so-called wholesale financing. So you want to cap the size of the banks in terms of their total liabilities and their total assets. So how big is the bank overall? And cap it as a percent of GDP. We're suggesting 4% of GDP as the total maximum. There are some Senate amendments that are pushing towards 3% of GDP. And if a bank wants to take on more risk, it would have to be substantially smaller. So a Goldman Sachs type operation would probably be capped around 2% of GDP. These are still big banks. They can operate globally. They can work just fine for the real economy. They will not, of course, generate as much bonuses for the guys who lead them.
There is a less radical recommendation that you hear about more often, which is to increase considerably the bank's capital requirements, is make them keep more money in the bank, in effect, reduce their leverage. Why wouldn't tough capital requirements accomplish the same ends that you would seek?
Well, I think if you can push capital requirements far enough, if you can go back to the kind of capital banks had before 1913, before the creation of the Federal Reserve and before the modern era of bank bailouts, so this would be 20 or actually 30% capital, then I think we can talk. But no one is going in that direction, Robert. And in fact, the process, this very complicated intergovernmental process around the Bank for International Settlements and the so-called Basel Committee, will probably end up saying the bank should have capital between 10 and 12% capital ratio. Lehman Brothers, 2 days before it failed, according to their public statements, of course, we'll see whether or not those turn out to have been misleading or not. But according to their public statements, they had 11.6% Tier 1 capital right before they failed. In other words, we'll probably end up with a new capital requirement that will put us to what Lehman actually had before they failed. So why does that make any sense?
If we are, in fact, at risk of another meltdown, and the next financial meltdown is in the subtitle of your book, have the past couple of years of Washington's response to the financial crisis made such a meltdown more likely, or has Washington simply failed to make one less likely?
They've certainly failed to make one less likely. I mean, what we're talking about here is a system of incentives and beliefs in and around Wall Street that leads into big trouble, both for the firms involved and for the country. And those incentives and those beliefs have not changed. The 13 bankers who were brought into the White House last March were basically saved completely. Their bonuses, their people, their staff, their pensions, even their boards of directors who'd supervised the most colossal financial collapse you've ever seen, they all stayed in place. Now, at least that's not fixing the problem as far as we see it. And I think it's probably making it worse because now these big players like Goldman, Citigroup, Bank of America, and so on really believe, with some justification, that they are too big to fail, and they will act accordingly.
Are there elements of Senator Christopher Dodd's financial regulation bill that give you any confidence that they might avert another financial disaster?
No.
No?
No. We support the Consumer Protection Agency, which Elizabeth Warren originally proposed and which has been taken up by the administration and in this legislation.
And Senator Dodd would place, he says he'd merely house it inside the Federal Reserve.
Yes, well, that makes no sense at all. Robert, as you know, the Federal Reserve has arguably the worst track record in terms of protecting consumers among all our regulators who all have terrible records. So, you know, that's just an indication of where we've got to on the legislation. But protecting consumers is fine, but it is not addressing these issues we're talking about, the too big to fail, the systemic risk. How do you prevent another financial meltdown? There is nothing, I'm afraid to say, in the legislation as currently drafted and it seems likely to pass that will remove this issue from our future.
On the other hand, it's sometimes argued nowadays in Washington that the experience of the past couple of years was so negative that indeed people will be risk averse to some extent for the next few years. That looking back on what happened, I've heard senior government economists cite the Great Depression, how caution persisted well into the 1950s based on the experience that people had. We can, by that theory, whatever the regulations are, expect a certain degree of caution built into the system now. Do you buy that?
Certainly people will be more careful for the next 1, 2, 3 years. That I agree. This is a cycle we're looking at. This is a cycle of excessive risk-taking. Right after you've seen a horrific accident on the highway, you do drive more carefully. But if you have the incentive to speed, if you feel that you're invulnerable, you will start to speed again quite quickly. So it's the same way with these banks. They're only human. They're only responding to sensible incentives. They're only doing their job. Jamie Dimon is the head of J.P. Morgan Chase. His job description nowhere stipulates that he's responsible for financial stability in the United States. He is there to make money for the shareholders of J.P. Morgan Chase. And he said, right after the bad stuff happened and after the big rescue and this massive unconditional bailout by the government, he said to his shareholders, we just had probably our best year ever.
Simon Johnson, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Simon Johnson is the author of 13 Bankers, The Wall Street Takeover, and The Next Financial Meltdown. His co-author is James Kwok, and Simon Johnson is a professor of entrepreneurship at MIT.